This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Professor Eric Bredo is with the University of Virginia's Curry School of Education, and he joins us in studio. Thank you so much for taking time out of your... I know this is a busy time for y'all, getting grades in and finals and everything, and I appreciate you taking some time to stop by the little studio here.
Thank you for inviting me, Coy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's start real quick. I always like to start with, you know, just introducing the speaker to the listeners, because I feel that's the big thing that's when I listen to the radio. I always feel like, tell me who I'm listening to. So let's start with Eric Bredo 101, where you're from and how you ended up here in beautiful Charlottesville.
Okay. I mostly grew up on the West Coast, and after going to Berkeley and Stanford, took a job at the University of Illinois. Then another one at Virginia Tech, then here, so I kept heading eastward, it seemed, and I've now been here, I think it's about 21 years.
Go east, young man.
Go east, young man, exactly. I got it wrong, but it's been good.
Did you go to college knowing you wanted to be in education and that you had that calling? Because I think that's the kind of, it's like police work or rescue work or doctoring. You really do have a calling to do this kind of thing.
Oh, I'm a terrible example for that. I was in physics first and then... systems analysis and sociology and urban planning and
wow.
So forth. So I eventually found what I liked.
There you go.
But it took quite a bit of experimentation.
We wanted to have you stop by, and I know we could talk many times, and look forward to having you in again. But we wanted to have you chat about No Child Left Behind. And before we get to the specifics of No Child Left Behind and sort of take stock of where it is now and is it working and if not, why not? And if it is, what's working about it? But before we get to that, let's talk about this whole idea that American schools are bad and that we're in crisis mode and that, you know, what was the situation such that President Bush felt behooved to push No Child Left Behind in the first place?
It's a very good question. It's not clear to many people exactly what the crisis is. Can be a little bit like news reports on crime are pretty independent of the actual crime rates. So the newspapers are saying crime is terrible, but when the crime rates are going down, I'm not saying there aren't issues to deal with, but the background to No Child Left Behind was basically this accountability movement started with Nation at Risk, perhaps, and then moved on to Goals 2000, which was here in Charlottesville, and then to No Child Left Behind. It seemed like that original crisis was stimulated by our economic difficulties with Japan. Remember, Japan was eating our lunch economically, and so people said, oh, it must be the schools. They turned to the schools. Of course, we educators would say, well, then we started eating Japan's lunch economically. It wasn't that the schools suddenly changed. If they did, why don't you tell us how wonderfully we've done?
Yeah. Because every few months you'll get the headline will come out saying American students can't find USA on a map and they don't know who the president is and you got to do something quick. And then all of a sudden all the legislators have their press conferences and say we're going to pass this law and that law and change everything. And the Republicans say the teachers are to blame and the Democrats say all these legislators with their unfunded mandates are the ones to blame. Make some sense of this for us.
Exactly right. I went to Greece a few years back with a couple colleagues of mine, and a Greek fellow got up and told us how Europe was falling behind the U.S. and how they had to catch up. And we had all the Nobel Prize winners and all the best universities and all the innovations. And we about fell off our chair. I have friends in Japan saying they're concerned about how they have to become more like the U.S. because they're too test-driven. They don't think creatively enough, so they have to loosen their system up. There's a worldwide sense of competition that's stimulated in part by the fact that increasingly we have worldwide measures of how kids are doing. We are actually comparing them across nations.
Which is a sort of a new thing in human history that we're comparing a school system, say, in Toledo with, something in the Philippines or in the Middle East or in Europe.
This is all really very new that we're doing it systematically across nations. Just the last decade or less, So, you know, we hear every time that we're not doing well relative to other nations. I have some of the data in front of me, and, you know, it might be interesting, but you have to bear in mind, who are we comparing with? What's the comparable? Who should we be compared with?
Right,
we're falling behind Singapore and Hong Kong. Now, those are city-states. Are those comparable units? Should we be compared with all of Europe? In which case, we're probably doing at least as well, if not better. We're doing better than some European nations, worse than others. So what's the comparable unit? Basically, everybody's getting paranoid, and there's some reasons for that.
So this, just to understand, so this whole crisis mode that America finds itself in, that, oh my gosh, we got to fix the schools and quick, and the teachers are failing, and Johnny can't read, this is not uniquely American. You're saying this is going on around the world.
I'm saying that exactly. The Germans had so-called PISA shock recently, where one of the European studies found that Germany wasn't doing as well as they thought they were. So everybody's going around saying, look at the other guys.
Yeah, yeah. And in that environment, which, as you point out, is not unique to the United States, but in that environment, here comes No Child Left Behind. What is the foreground of No Child Left Behind, and what exactly is it?
Oh, boy, good question. The foreground, I think, is actually a conflict in values. I think there's a sense that the 60s decreased a sense of common standards and agreement on standards. So a more conservative effort was partly to bring common standards into place through kind of forced accountability measures. I think that's part of it. No Child Left Behind was actually sponsored, supported by Democrats as well. So you got a, what I would get, say is a Republican emphasis on accountability and bottom line measures and if you don't do your job, you're fired, kind of thinking, and Democratic thinking that emphasized, equalization and, equity and, making sure we didn't have two educational systems, one for the poor and one for the rich. So No Child Left Behind really combined those things, strong pressure for accountability and strong pressure for equalization with, and it represents really an incredible change in centralized control from the federal level, even though the standards themselves in many ways are set at the state level.
Which, two quick thoughts. On the face of it, I couldn't disagree with any of those things. Those all sound like great things that we should have. Like, wouldn't it be great if we had all those things in our schools? And the second thing, I've always thought it was very strange that conservative Republicans would really push something like this. It's a very top-down, it goes contrary to everything you think that a Republican is when it comes to, you know, I don't want Washington telling me how to run things here. I'll get Washington off my back. I don't want those folks all the way over there in Washington telling me how to run my business or run my school. But that's exactly what they did.
Well, that's very interesting. Of course, Republican themes have been for free markets, but for tighter moral control. So this might fit that to some degree. But I think probably a more direct impetus or more direct reason really comes from, first from governors looking at their budgets expanding. I think you talked to the last speaker about transportation costs
in
Virginia. So, and you know, we were building prisons a few years back. So you got roads, you got prisons, you got health care, you got education. And then people say, well, how can we control the budget? Well, let's make the schools more efficient, and that make them compete with one another. I think partly that controls the budget or helps change the ethos. It also changes the discussion. The discussion prior to that was all about equity. Now the discussion is largely about efficiency.
And performance. Yeah.
So the 60s, you know, had a period of equalization talk. The 80s, mid-80s onward, it all got to be efficiency talk. So it's kind of a way of changing the talk. Governors looked like they were reforming something that didn't cost anything, so they could put this in place.
And they could tell everyone that they fixed the schools and that they're doing something about that crisis.
Exactly. And by the time the problems come along, they're out off. They've moved down the road someplace else.
We're talking with Professor Eric Bredow of the University of Virginia's Curry School of Education. A quick break. We'll be right back. Phone lines are open at 977-1070. If you have a comment or a question about the schools, would love to hear from you. You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now on News Radio 1070 WINA. Professor Eric Bredow is our guest. He's with the UVA Curry School of Education. Martha is on the line in Albemarle County. Martha, thanks for the call. You're on with Professor Bredow.
Oh, hello. I found your discussion really interesting. We lived in Germany and hurried back to Charlottesville to have our son finish at Western, where we felt sure he would be getting a better education than what he experienced there. I have a lot to say about how well Albemarle County seems to me to be doing. Thought I'd take that opportunity to say that on the radio. One of the things that I find, I'd love to hear what Professor Bredow has to say about the issue of demographics, changing demographics, and the fact that the United States still has a growing population, as does India, you know, Pakistan, China, having an effect on education standards and competition and things like that.
Martha, thank you for the call. Great question.
Yes, I agree. That's very interesting. I think that affects things in a couple ways. One is we have a large immigrant population. So when we look at our test scores, if they aren't going up as we might expect, part of that's because we're dealing with people who are coming in continuously and have to be taught English and caught up with things. That was part of it. I'm sorry. I forgot the rest of my answer.
Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Or is it a mixed bag when we talk about, immigration, of course, isn't new. I mean, people have always been coming to America and schools have always been evolving and adapting to kids in the classroom who don't necessarily speak English, who don't necessarily, aren't necessarily Christian, who, you know, aren't necessarily exactly like the kids who preceded them.
Yeah, sure. And so they have to. That actually brings up the second issue, which is increasingly we may get a division between those who are receiving the educational services and those who are paying for them. So as we have an aging population, the baby boomers are getting older. They've got a lot of cash. They're saying, why should I send money to the schools? My kids are through with the system. We've got a poorer immigrant population in some places and some dramatic changes that way. So politically, we could certainly have a crisis in terms of do we have the political support for the educational services we need. There's one other element, which is I think, and this is really more an economist would know much more about this than I, but we have wage competition with other countries, and that's one reason everybody feels a little paranoid. Wages have not gone up in this country as they might have been expected to, given our productivity increases. And part of that's probably due to the fact that, work is being done elsewhere. So we're all competing increasingly in a worldwide wage market. That's another demographic factor.
Yeah. Professor Eric Bredow, our guest. Martha, thank you so much for the call, and always good to hear somebody supporting our local schools and having good things to say about them. Let's talk about No Child Left Behind in the few minutes that we have left. What exactly is No Child Left Behind? And the folks that I have talked to, both in the schools and in the legislature, are not fans of this thing in the slightest. I mean, mm-hmm. they don't really have much good to say about it at all.
Okay, let me summarize real quickly what No Child Left Behind requires. It asks the schools to assess students every year in grades 3 through 8 in reading and math and one time in high school. And it insists that all students must reach proficiency by the year 2014, or 12 years after this thing started in 2002. The states define what proficiency is, and some states started rather low, some states rather high. The states are supposed to set standards each year for what is considered to be adequate yearly progress. And if the states, so that they can achieve this goal of everybody being proficient in 2014, if any group of kids in the school, and they have to separate out the reports for kids who are poor, kids who are of minority racial or ethnic status, kids who have limited English proficiency, and students with disabilities. If any one group of these kids doesn't achieve this annual adequate yearly progress for 2 years in a row, then the school is basically specially labeled in need of improvement.
It's a failing school.
It fails, yeah. As far as the feds are concerned. And then they have to basically support the kids going to other schools, other public schools. It could be a charter school, it could be another public school. So that school basically loses money to these other places. If it happens another year, then they have to provide supplemental services, which could be private services, including those provided by faith-based providers.
We're talking with Professor Eric Bredow about No Child Left Behind. He's with the University of Virginia. David's on the line in Nelson. David, hang on just 1 second. Really quick, doesn't this create a situation, and this is well documented, where the schools are sort of, you know, they cheat on these tests, and they sort of find out a way to work around the exact requirements just so they can show these numbers so that they don't get failing, and they move kids around, and you take the test here versus there? And
certainly you get playing the system in various ways. You teach the test, but it gets harder to do that. If I could just point out one other really more fundamental problem, basically all the commentators I've heard think that these goals are unrealistic, that there's no scenario under which the schools can achieve them. So the whole thing feels to those in the schools like a big double bind. It's like asking your dog to jump over the moon, and when it can't do it, it gets punished. And so that's really the crux of it. If you ask the schools to do something impossible, punish them financially and in other ways if they don't do it, what have you set up but a whole scenario, a train wreck really ahead for the public schools as a whole?
David's on the line in Nelson. David, I got about 30 seconds. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I'll go quick. I'll agree that the standards are set way too high for what is realistic in a school system, but I'm a special education teacher, and I'm very thankful for No Child Left Behind because it shines a light and has gotten me a lot of the things I need to get my kids where they need to be as far as grade level is concerned. By setting up these subgroups, we were able to also set up, take kids out of converted bathrooms that were learning disabled in special education, quote-unquote, classrooms.
David, thank you so much. Thank you so much for the call. There's an example where No Child Left Behind might be working. Professor Eric Bredow, you're going to have to come back. I would look forward to having you back in.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.